and welcome to the next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, now when you're deep in your business, like you are with MicroYes and I am developing partnerships in Grow CFO, you know, you're busy and you never really enjoy the process as much as perhaps you should. You're suffering from all the side effects of, can I get this done? Where's the next customer coming from? All sorts of things like that. Wouldn't it be nice if somebody could tell us how to get rid of all those side effects that stop us enjoying stuff?
Well, look, I'm starting from a really sceptical position here because I'm not sure you can. However, I'm sure you can sort of take the edge off if you did a little bit, like a paracetamol would do for your business, if you like. But I'm sure that Ollie Cook is a lot more than just a sort of a paracetamol in real life. He started life in Suffolk, Ollie, but welcome to the next 100 Days podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. And I'm also a skeptic, I would say. So I can agree with you there. And I would say success without side effects is more of an intention, because life, of course, presents so many challenges all the time, and business as well.
You've definitely got a voice for podcasting. I think you've come across it already. I don't know about you, Kevin. I think he could replace either of us.
Oh, he could. Yes.
I think you mainly more rather than me. But I mean, yeah, I mean, he could easily replace us with that voice.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I've always said that Graham's got a face for podcasting.
Well, that's true. But so, Ollie, you have this business called Ollie Cook Coaching, and it's just literally Oli Cook with an E. coaching.com. So that's your website that you present to the world. Tell us a little bit about kind of how you got into all of this, Ollie.
Yeah, so I guess I took quite an unconventional route. I lived in Hanoi in Vietnam for a number of years, and was focused there. A lot of what I was doing was kind of working with teaching people pronunciation, and I got really focused on that. I really enjoyed it. I was also learning Vietnamese and fascinated with that and all of the muscles and making sounds, and as I was supporting people with that and their fluency, it kind of led me to, well, there's actually a big part of this isn't actually their competence, it's their mindset around actually sort of speaking in the confidence that they have. And coupled with going through some of my own real challenges with kind of anxiety and panic, I was just sort of naturally fascinated in things that worked, and then also professionally fascinated by it to see, well, what would actually help my clients in sort of achieving the results that they wanted. And it just continued going on from there. And as I sort of just had an insatiable appetite essentially for what worked.
Clients at that stage, Ollie, were people who were trying to learn English as a second language, presumably.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They presumably a range of people, business people, and were students. Maybe I don't know.
A lot of them were more professionals actually that I was working with. Yeah, so adults, and they perhaps had international jobs. More so, I'd say, than my experience personally. So,
did you find it difficult to motivate them to sort of stick with the program?
Generally, I've always just seemed to find myself working with people who are quite driven. And that's now, as I work now exclusively pretty much with entrepreneurs as well, the people who I work with, their sort of default state is action.
Yeah.
And so it's not really much motivation from me, but rather just getting things out of the way so that they're clear to move forward again.
Like Kevin's default is action, isn't it, Kevin? You're always doing things that are moving you around the world, especially in the Northeast, Kevin.
I kind of like to think so, but there is that bit where you flounder around a bit. You don't get very far. So I'm always open to anything that can help sort of get, in a way, me out of the way of myself.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to talking to Ollie about some of the things that you're talking about. I mean, I'm actually looking at the bottom of your website, Ollie, I'm seeing there's a bit that you've got there called mind-blowing statistics. 95% of brain activity is run by the unconscious mind. 60% changing unconscious beliefs can improve performance by. And 90% of Olympic athletes use mental rehearsal. Now, those stats are phenomenal in a way. Can you tell us some more about, I guess, what's at the heart of what you're telling people?
Yeah, I think the at the heart of it is there's this kind of superpower of the unconscious that's driving so much of our habits and behaviors, thoughts, impulses, feelings that we largely don't really know how to communicate with. And so much of the kind of side effects that my clients, that myself, find myself in are sort of a miscommunication with trying to get myself to do something in a way that isn't really clear to the unconscious. And I think a lot of Olympic athletes, they're the sort of ones using mental rehearsal, like Michael Phelps would kind of mentally rehearse over and over again, doing the lengths in the pool to the point where it's just automatic, and sort of visualizing every type of scenario that could happen, so that he's never really surprised by it. They get that sort of, when you can almost like automate it like that, it can give you a really significant advantage. That's one example in that respect. But I think also when you, it can lead to so much overwhelm trying to get ourselves to do something if it's not really being understood. Lots of energy can go into things that either aren't possible to do, or don't exist now. They're somewhere in the future, or something that previously has happened, or not.
Isn't that really part of the fun of business, though? I know I have a particular impending issue, and it's, without going into the detail, it's to do with, imagine that you're going to sell 10 units, can cope. But if somebody says, I want 1,000 units, can't cope. So what on earth? And I'm now starting to think through that, I don't know what the right word is, a scale issue, which I think is something that is genuinely possible, that a problem that I might face in the next 6 months. So I'm trying to figure out how I, without sort of leaping and finding myself dragged under with a current and out of business, in other words, spending too much to solve a problem that's not there yet, versus almost mentally, Michael Phelps type, figuring out, okay, step by step, what's the almost like the best way to get through that problem. Now, I don't know if that's an entrepreneurial issue that you're facing on a regular basis with these entrepreneurs, because presumably they're all scaling something. But for me, that's some of the thoughts that are going through my mind. But I find that fascinating, because I'm pitching myself against this issue, and backing myself to come up with a solution. But I'm not sure necessarily what the technique, and to put Kevin's point earlier, fascinated to sort of, if this is there something out there that can help that process, I don't know, just deliver quicker, better, whatever.
Yeah, I think I want to make sure that I kind of actually sort of speak into what you're talking about here. But what I'm with those type of challenges that I think are always coming up again and again and again, there's something every day. What I'm always looking to do with my clients is get their minds sharper, so they're thinking, they're most clear, they're most strategic. And often what's getting in the way of that is sort of preoccupation on something that maybe has no possibility, or it's finished and there's nothing that can be done about it now, or it's something that's upcoming that doesn't require any more thinking about or any more planning, because there's nothing more that can be done about that. And so it's really sort of it's getting their energy and their focus and their attention on what's really possible, and those things that would be good to have done as well, so that they can come at those problems with their sharpest thinking.
That's I can understand that's really getting towards it. In a sense, it's almost like there's almost like a center lane, the lane that we're not supposed to drive in. And then there are two other lanes, but they're possibly not either of them are not really what you want, but you want that kind of clarity of thought that will get you from A to B in terms of the decisions that are needed. And I am genuinely going through that. And what I'm finding myself doing is talking to people about it. So it's maybe part of the kind of like sound out, what do you think? And I've got this imagine, I've got this thing in my mind as to how I might be able to overcome it. What do you think? And it's that kind of approach that I'm taking. But I don't know whether I'm just different or that's just a lousy way of doing it. I don't know. I just at the moment that's where I'm at. I just you're about high performance, high fulfillment, which is an interesting word. It means something to me in my world. But
Okay.
high performance, that's the bit that's, that kind of taking away the other bits that are going to can't do much about. Focus your best thinking on this. I like that. I do like it. It's just how.
And that's pretty much what I see as my job. So how I would when it comes to a session, for example, most of the times, the people who sort of find me, they've tried the self-help, they've tried so many different ways of trying to kind of cut their own hair and sort of get themselves to do things differently. But so much of that is kind of happening perhaps just out of sight, just in the blind spots. And then sometimes when you kind of bring it out, it's like, oh, that's obvious. It's like, yeah, but it is because it was just there, but it was just out of sight. It's kind of like you can't quite see when you're that close to it. And I mean, I've with my own personal journey, I tried a lot of different things to, just in one category of the side effects, like to get myself like less anxious and sort of calmer and clearer and thinking like that. A lot of it didn't really work. It sort of helped a bit. It sort of helped me cope a little bit, but it didn't really cause a root, or I say like a root level change.
Why do you, sorry, this isn't a therapy session, but why do you feel that you needed that? You seem to be quite a grounded guy, and you've travelled and you've helped people. What was it about life that was making you anxious?
It was almost like a sort of a fear of things like disappearing, losing, losing what I'd managed to sort of achieve. And sort of it just got to a point where, I was doing a lot of the self-help stuff, and it was saying stuff like, you need to be really careful about the thoughts that you think, because those are then like creating, what it is in your life. And so that then made me even more anxious, because I was like, well, I just thought that thought, what's that going to do, and so it ended up being this kind of real spiral that I just wasn't able to actually snap myself out of. It required actually somebody else to really,
You should stop reading those damn books, Ollie. I mean,
I
a little
have.
bit like the hypochondriac that reads the medical symptoms of stuff and then says,
Dr. Google, yeah.
I've got that. Therefore, I must be suffering from this horrible disease,
Yeah.
which go see a doctor and you find out you're not.
Yeah. But I as I've spoken to more people and met more people, I realize I'm really not the only one.
No, but I think I pro I'm probably underplaying some of that anxiety, because I've certainly had it in my time. So especially in one or two corporate jobs, when I gave a damn about what other people thought. Now I, the only person that I take issue with is the guy in the mirror, and so from that point of view, you have your own standards, and often they're much higher than other people will give to you. So basically, I don't know. Maybe I just don't really. I know that in my life, and you look at Kevin, he's made a huge success of the things that he does because he's relentless at it. I know I've watched him for 10 years. It's a bit like watching a film that never stuck. Take a break, Kevin. I mean, I'd rather have a shoot 'em up, but no, Kevin's there and he's just relentless at it. And I can see a little bit in myself, but I don't want to just say I don't care, but the results will be the results, and if I'm focused enough, they'll be good enough. And Dan Kennedy used to—I don't know if you come across Dan—he just has this phrase that, good enough is good enough. The pursuit of of perfection is often—it's debilitating. But in a sense, you are making this choice of pursuing maybe not perfection, but high performance, which is a notch below perfection, isn't it? So basically, you're pursuing that high performance in people. What is it about your sessions with people that enables them to get high performance from you?
Yeah, I think often they've already sort of they're already doing high performing things. They're already seeing themselves as high performers, and they're already very ambitious people who are taking those type of actions that would put them in that category. Where they are finding use from our sessions is they perhaps there's something that they really want to do or really want to bring into the world, really want to create, and they're sort of doing lots of busy action that's perhaps not that, and then it's like, well, what's going on with that? And there'll be some kind of specific fears or sort of beliefs about how that the something about the process or something about the obtaining of that thing wouldn't be okay, or there's a conflict that they're experiencing, you know, and so it's kind of clearing that what's been in the way for them with that particular vision or goal that they have. So other people would likely look at them and be like, yeah, they're a high performer, but they themselves are like, yes, I know that you would say that, but actually I know where I want to go. I know what my potential is, and it's sort of haunting me a little bit, where even if you see me as a high performer, I know what I want to achieve, and I know that I'm not there yet. And so that's kind of how I would help them actualize, realize where they want to be, which I think is it would be in a very personal category, if that answers that.
Yeah. So, Ollie, I'm looking on your website, and there's a section in there that talks about your private coaching and what you do. You're certified in NLP, inner leadership coaching, and trained in rapid resolution therapy. But in your sessions, you say you use rapid root level shifts to cause quick, effective transformations. So what's that all about?
So that is the approach that I use for my clients to cause a shift at that deeper level of the mind. A lot of the time, it's an analogy I often use is if you think of this guy who's kind of shaking a Bluetooth speaker saying, I really hate this song so much, you know, you'd say to him, I get you don't like this song, but I think you're going to have more success if you find where it's playing from and change it there. I think that people are able to notice and experience the thoughts and the feelings that they're having, but I don't believe that people select all thoughts and feelings. And I think they're coming from a different place to where they're experienced. And when you can cause a change at that root level, it can then change what's experienced. And so it's kind of almost doing like a sort of software update, if you like.
Okay, so what does that would that involve? Is that some sort of meditation, hypnotherapy, something like that?
So it's kind of it's like a multi-level communication with the mind. So there's logical, it has to be very logical and on board with, you know, the person I'm in front of has to be totally like on board with any changes that they would like. And then it's getting that message to sink through using metaphors, using examples that make sense to that the deeper level of the mind, which is much more and much less logical and much more visual understanding things. And then what one of the reasons we find stories stick with us so much is because they've kind of gone into those deeper levels. And so it's sort of shifting things there, and sort of guided meditations can be used, and sort of visualization, mental rehearsal, as we spoke about a bit earlier, that type of thing. And what it means is that quite significant change can happen quite quickly.
So I think when you say root, I always think of root canal, and that
Ow, and
hurts.
I think pain.
Well, yeah, well, in a way, it's getting to the core of the problem, isn't it? It's you, you know, and there's something going terribly wrong with your tooth. So, all right, we'll take the root out. We'll take out that the and that hurts from experience. But basically, I'm not saying that you're going to put your clients through a world of pain, Ollie, but at the end of the day, It seems to me that you've got to enter their mind, or they've got to allow that sort of pathway within the mind to get to that kind of root level. And that might be the prompting of these story type analogies, etc., so that they can appreciate the problem that you perceive they've got.
Yeah. So it's actually pretty much not painful. A lot of the time it's actually quite fun and light, and humor can be involved too. And the way that I would kind of structure it, if we were to kind of break it down, is somebody would show up and be like, "Hey, this is what's been going on for me." I'd be listening to really check that I've got it and make sure that I've really fully understood it. And then essentially kind of taking them through a process of shifting the perspective on it, trying on a different way of thinking, and then kind of installing that program going forward. So when that change happens, people tell me it feels natural, it's automatic, and it lasts.
I suppose I had that when I got rid of Microsoft from my computers and only had Apple. So, but you know, still every now and again we have a bit of an issue, but nowhere near the problems that Microsoft caused me. But however, if Microsoft are listening, well, it was your fault. So,
And that's what it's about, changing the software, Graham.
well, I did. This is fascinating stuff, Ollie. I mean, I noticed from the testimonials you got, just the page I was looking at, there's more women than men. Do you find that female entrepreneurs sort of almost like really get it more than male entrepreneurs on the whole? And I don't want you to become genderist or whatever the term is, but it seems to me that you've got a lot more testimonials from females than males. Now, why would that be?
Interesting question. Yeah, I do tend to work with more females. I don't really know why. I perhaps they've tried more that hasn't worked, or maybe a little bit more open to trying something different. I'm not sure actually. Don't know.
I think there's part of it will be your voice. I mean, I don't mean that in a sort of partly humorous, but the point is, I do think it's a very calming delivery that you have. And, you know, perhaps with some men, it might be more, I don't know, grating or whatever, but the point is, you're not. And I don't so far hear too many trite answers or too many corporate cooked up answers, and I'm trying to think of the right phrase here, but basically you come across as somebody who's re I know you might be using NLP, I know you might be using some of the techniques that you've trained in, but you don't badge them that way. You don't it, You're coming across in a very natural way, and I think probably females are usually far more, infinitely more intelligent than males on many subjects. They probably will tune into that, and I think that's something possibly. I don't know how you could research it, but there is a reason, and I think it's you.
Yeah, and I guess I'm not particularly like sort of masculine guy, really. I'm not that sort of I've never really been like that, so perhaps that's a factor in it as well. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. I don't know. You have a beard. I mean, mind you, having said that, some of these new women have beards as well, though, don't they? But let's not go there. But anyway, what can I say? Ke Kevin 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 Rengs, I'm going to go to jail at some stage. You know,
Oh,
he'll be
yes.
there, along with
When
everybody else.
they enforce political correctness by law, which can't be far away, Graham, you're
Oh,
definitely first up against
God. Well, probably will. Yeah, but
it.
sadly, there's too many people in jail with that kind of issue already. Never mind in the future. However, moving back, okay. So we've established a bit about you, but there's this thing about, I love the Phelps thing, like the way in which you sort of help people focus, I guess, and prioritize, I guess. Those are the things that a lot of coaches can do, but you make it, I don't know. You make everything like that focused on high performance. And when your clients come back and say, "This is the difference that you've made," what do you normally hear?
Yeah. So I tend to have two types of clients, those who are kind of with me for a short period of time on something specific, and we kind of clear that out of the way, and then they're back to kind of what they were doing, or the longer term clients who sort of stick with me and see that as something that they like to have, almost like weekly we'll meet. And so for that type of client, I can think of someone in particular who says when Wednesdays come about, her team starts to get like they look forward to Wednesdays because they know that they're getting a version of her where she's really like clear thinking, she's on a sort of like best sort of performance mode, and that tends to ripple out into Thursday, and it's just kind of clearing away all the clouds, all the cobwebs, all the kind of things that were getting in the way. And often, you know, she's not wanting to share some of the doubts that she has about her own ambitions and visions and stuff with team members. So that's something we do together as well.
It's okay. So if I'm okay, so there's a difference between sort of short term and long term, and you can you I think what you're saying is that with the guys who are around you for longer, they're noticing, and maybe their teams are noticing, that there is a point in their week, there's a point in their day when they're all of a sudden tuned in. An example from my own personal life, I've noticed over the decades that I've been working that I'm more creative in the afternoon, later in the afternoon. I figure that's because I'm getting tired, my brain's slowing down, etc., and therefore it's allowing itself to consider the possibilities. And so if there's any creative work, probably going to, for me, probably going to be better after 3 o'clock, you know. That's me, but I don't know if from your point of view, you probably don't come at it from that point of view, or do you? Is that one of the things that you ask your clients? You know, because you're looking at performance, how do you get them to perform?
So I think about things a bit differently in terms of compared to how most people think. So the normal way to kind of understand things, and I don't think this is not true. I'm people who are much cleverer than me disagree about what true is and spend a lot of time figuring that out. I'm kind of more interested in what's useful for my clients, and so most people would say that situations cause feelings and emotions. And so if this guy's kicking this other guy, we'd say, well, he's getting angry because that guy's kicking him. That's a normal way to see things, but I don't really have any power then to be able to stop that guy kicking that guy. And so the way that I go through my sessions with my clients is can we think that the what's been causing the thoughts and feelings has been the way the mind's been processing information? And so then I have some power to be able to adjust ways in which the mind's been processing that information. And that then leads to a sort of clarity, sharpness coming, being able to make clearer decisions, without the fears in the way. That's one of the main things that I do for clients is as they're coming up against different levels of growth and unfamiliarity and uncertainty, different sort of fears emerge. And so it's sort of either dialing them down to a point where they can move forward, even if it's still uncomfortable, or even eliminating them entirely around a particular context.
Yeah, sometimes I have to take a little bit of time to digest this. I don't know about you, Kevin. I mean, you probably get it straight away because you're an accountant. You probably see ones and noughts or everywhere. But you know, so, but for me, I'm like looking at, you know, all the aspects. And or do you get it then, Kevin? Is this something that you can sort of put into your words?
I do kind of get it because we touched on self-help, and one of my favorite authors, Paul McKenna, Paul is talking about NLP, reprogramming your mind, looking at stuff from the past that's holding you back, and talking about it in not woo-woo ways, but in very practical ways that, yeah, I do get it. And it's also interesting that having read a couple of books written by sports coaches, that visualization thing is definitely a big piece. I remember one that I read about changed this dude was working with an Olympic athlete who wasn't quite there, was good enough to be at the Olympics, but not good enough to be in the medaling positions, and asked her how she was visualising the race. And she was definitely sitting on the sidelines in the grandstand watching the race. So he told her to stop doing that and visualise herself looking forward, being on the track and crossing the finish line first. And that was what she then attributed as one of the biggest things to winning the gold medal.
Wow.
Is it your kind of coaching that, Ollie?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I would say that's certainly an element of... So one of the things that I'll do myself and encourage my clients to do a lot is set an intention, but make the intention clear in a way that the unconscious can understand it. So in that example, that's very easy to understand. It's visual. I can see myself crossing the line. I can see myself winning. And it's something, So often with a client, we'll come up with like a sort of clear intention of them sort of at the end of the day, looking back on having, let's say, gone through a meeting that they were really nervous about and really happy with how they handled it, really happy with how they dealt with challenges and how they communicated.
Earlier, I mentioned that I do a bit of walking, and you have this product, a 5-part audio series. So powerful ways powerful rapid relief audios to transform your mindset as you walk. Now, as I walk every day, and you know, I tend to be listening to all kinds of things on my way around. But basically, you have this product, which is presumably an audio product that they just download an MP, whatever, 3 or whatever, and they'll listen to this on the way around. What would be in that rapid relief audio when I'm walking? What are you just quietly telling a story to sort of reprogram issues around issues that I've got? I'm trying to understand what I would hear. I know you're talking about quickly shift from suffocating, overwhelm, nagging worries, disaster days, etc.
Yeah.
Which we all have. But having said that, you're obviously, if you're listening, it's probably a really good way of getting some of these messages across, because
I'm walking, yeah.
You're walking. You're doing something with your body. You're moving, and your brain is far more, I don't know, open maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you're walking, it's like, so one of the things that they'll sort of teach for anxiety is like bilateral stimulation, where you're activating both sides of the brain, and sort of anxiety tends to be in one hemisphere. And so when you're walking, you're naturally doing that actually, because you're sort of looking left to right, you're using both sides of the body. Mm-hmm. And it puts you in more of like an altered state of consciousness as you're walking. So the things that you're listening to, they can go in if there's agreement. Not if you disagree with the stuff you're listening to, but if there's agreement, that stuff can sort of sink in. And so that particular, what you're talking about there, there's like sort of specific things. So one of them, I think, is related to sort of switching off after work. So you sort of, if you finished, you're listening, and then rather than having the mind keep going, trying to work inside your head instead of, you know, on the laptop, it's sort of getting the mind to power down.
I like the idea of doing that, because there'll be certain things that you'll take away. And how long's each?
I can send them to you if you like. They're like seven minutes or eight minutes, 9 minutes. So sort of they're not. My idea was to keep them under 10 minutes for people. That's... You're a big walker, so you do long walks. But
I mean, yeah, but I there's all kinds of sheep and cows that are. And a sheepdog along the way, and lots of other dog walkers and God knows what, and canal books and all kinds of people that I go by every day. But basically, yeah, I'd love to have that. But so, Ollie, if you sort of said to yourself, okay, I'm doing this for high-performance entrepreneurs, some of them are women, some of them men, but basically you are really making a difference. What is it about what you're doing right now that you've thought to yourself, boy, if I could just do this, I could be so much more helpful? Is there anything, or are you quite comfortable with the solutions that you're offering right now?
With what I'm able to kind of do for somebody in front of me on a call, I'm quite happy with what we're able to get done, actually. Yeah, it compared to over the years, what I've been able to do, what I can do for someone now compared to what I could do for someone 2 years ago, 5 years ago. I'm really happy with it. Yeah, I'd say. And where I am right now, I do really enjoy working one-on-one, because there's something about the personal aspect of it, that I just enjoy. I find it. I've moved back and forth between doing sort of group things and having more digital things, but I really like that connection. And often the people I'm working with are making really big impacts in their areas and industry, so I also feel like I get sort of even more contribution in that way in a bit.
I know one of my walk friends I've made in the last couple of months. She's had terrible anxiety issues to do with her past, and I won't go into that for sure. But basically, one of the things that she said really gives her help is by talking to AI, in particular chat. And basically, here's my issue. What do you say? Here's my issue, et cetera, et cetera. And there's back and forth on that side. And it's almost like nobody has been prepared to listen in that way, almost like a detached, intelligent way. You think of ChatGPT, et cetera, is probably, IQ that you'll never get to, And I don't expect you to say there's something wrong with that or otherwise, because if it works for it, it works for it. But the point is that likely to become almost like a competing alternative for you?
Probably, yeah, in some ways. I mean, I don't know for sure, but likely some people will get some use out of that and something out of that. And I think it can be useful. I think that, like you say, there's a level of kind of intelligence, and a lot of people, when you're sort of talking to them, they're just waiting to then say what they want to say rather than really listening to really understand what it is that you're saying. And so I think I can see how that would be useful, and it has even been useful for me as well. I think, for some people, maybe that will be enough, and then for other people, they'll really kind of crave the human connection side of it. So, yeah, I imagine some people
Yeah,
will want that and be happy with that.
I think that's a really good answer, and it's a very honest, vulnerable answer almost. But it's nonetheless, I do think there's going to be such a wide range of people who just want another human to talk to. So
It's always sort of in the back of your mind a little bit that it's not actually a human, I think, sometimes. Sometimes there can be a little bit of like nuance or context that's not quite there, but maybe that will change. Who knows?
Well, put it this way, they're not going to get any worse.
No.
Well, apart from potentially what they might do to us in about 10, 15 years. But we had
Oh,
somebody on
yeah.
the podcast not too long ago who talked about some of the dangers of AI. But that's for another time. But the things that you're doing for people in these high performance areas, you're obviously making a difference. How do you get them to come to you? Do you just sort of put up your website and hope they find you, or is it something that you happen to be in the right places? Do you sort of Is it a networking thing that they come to you, or how do you is it a LinkedIn thing?
I think it's been a combination of things sort of over time, building relationships, emails, and networking. I've also more recently been doing sort of guest workshops in people's paid programs and sort of podcast episodes and referrals as well. A few people sort of like referring people to me, and I think as I've started to get more effective at what I do as well, I've found that's helping a bit with referrals. But yeah, it's a challenge sometimes to because what I didn't really get was that you can get really skilled at something, and then if you're not skilled at communicating it, then you might as well not be skilled at it, because you can't help anyone. So I've found I've spent a lot of time and effort and money in sort of trying to learn how to become skilled at communicating what I do, so that those people who are actually really struggling recognize that I can do something. But it's challenging. Yeah, it's challenging sometimes.
And if you said that, okay, I outside of work, outside of whatever you're doing as a coach, outside of that, what are the things that you really get, up for? Is it for Kevin and I? It's probably a little bit of football, but there's other things. Kevin has other hobbies, etc. But I, Do you have anything else that sort of is your downtime? You're not thinking about your clients. You're just, apart from, time with your partner, but other than that, I'm thinking, what else is it that you do that gives you that kind of pleasure?
Yeah. Well, similar to yourself in a way, actually, I really like walking. So I will do any chance I can to get outside and walk, and wherever I've been living, that's always been something that I like to try and do daily. At the end, ideally, it's kind of like a reward. If I finish my work on time, then I can
Oh,
get out
brilliant.
and walk. I enjoy kind of any racket sports. So tennis is something that I've played a lot of
Have you done this
enjoy.
paddle thing, this paddle board?
I actually haven't played it yet, but
I've seen
I certainly would
people.
like to.
Yeah, I would as well.
Raise at the moment.
Yeah.
It is, and I can't understand why people don't divide up their tennis courts, because often you'll see tennis courts unused, but people are looking for this new. You got two for the price of one. It's strange, and I've seen people playing it and having a whale of a time, and you
Yeah.
can get to it as well.
I think it's quite social as well, isn't it? I mean, I haven't played it, but I can see you're closer, so it makes sense that it's easier to talk, whereas tennis, you're quite far away a lot of the time. Difficult to really have good conversations.
And you've traveled the world, lived, like you said, you lived in Vietnam. And I mean, that must have been one heck of an experience.
I really enjoyed living there. It's very different culturally to Suffolk and England and countryside, but yeah, it's made a lot of friends and acquaintances there, and learned a lot about sort of different cultures, and it makes you question quite a lot of things as well, I think, sometimes about how you're automatically doing things. And I met my girlfriend there as well. She's South African.
Oh, well, that's natural, isn't it? You met a South African in Vietnam, but again, but presumably you were both traveling and
Yeah, we were both living there at the time, actually.
Oh, well, well, lovely place to draw this to a close. And Ollie, you've been an absolutely wonderful guest on the Next 100 Days podcast.
So, Graham, are you going to put any of that into practice?
I want to try. As you heard, Ollie's offered an audio series that he's created, and I'll certainly give it a go, because I know you do some walking as well. So if you've got a dog in hand, I do it mainly without dogs. I mean, every now and again I have a dog to walk, but I'll definitely listen to that. And if it gives you a slight edge, Kevin, then why not?
Why not? Exactly. I mean, I'm seeing angles of lots of stuff that I've read about in other books coming out from Ollie, and I rather like the practical way that he's addressing it. I think that listening to those audios is going to be worthwhile, and I may go
I
and think.
think, look, if you are a entrepreneur who's kind of got a bit of a roadblock, you'll know what it is, and you want somebody to help you sort of unpick that and actually, get your performance to the highest possible level for yourself and your company and all the things that you're trying to achieve. Ollie Cook, Oli Cook with an E, and coaching.com. And, have a look at the website, listen to the podcast. I think you could do a heck of a lot worse.
I do, and I love the way Ollie actually came over in that podcast. He came over as somebody who actually practices in his own life what he suggests to clients, and that's a powerful testament in itself.
Well, if you recall, I mean, right from the beginning, I kind of his voice was very, I don't know what's the right word, therapeutic in a way. It's definitely a BBC voice, Oh, sorry, that's not necessarily a compliment from me, but it comes across really quite melodic, and I think possibly some of that might be the answer to why so many of his, entrepreneurs are happen to be female. I don't know, might be wrong, but it'd be interesting to ask the female clients that he's had, why did they choose him?
It would. It would. Or is there something that's more in the male brain about helping with this kind of stuff? It feels a bit woo-woo. It's a bit of a sign of weakness. Don't know.
I don't think I should know. Yeah, I know what you mean, but I think some he's grappling with the way in which the brain treats issues, and trying to come up with practice that helps you disassociate yourself from things you don't need to be thinking about because they're done. They're not an issue. Focus on the main thing, and that kind of help. Is exactly what an entrepreneur who wants to grow quickly needs.
And everything that Ollie's talking about is essentially based on NLP, just changing the pathways in the brain. And I've looked at it myself, read Paul McKenna's books on it, recorded a couple of podcasts with Susanna Serrano Davy, who's been one of our past guests on this. And there's definitely something there. It's a scientifically proven thing.
I, in the nicest possible way, you have over the last few decade or so working with you have been one of the most innovative is the wrong word, but you are fascinated with the with these things. You get you can plot a plot a line all the way through, and it's the guests really get to you, and you're thinking, I've got to do that. And this is you. I don't know what it was about your early life that made you thirst for the new, for the innovative new, something that you knew somehow, if I could only master, I'd be a brilliant whatever it is. But that is definitely you. And I think that's honestly, I genuinely, actually, I see that in one of my children as it happens. And so therefore, there's probably a little bit of it in me. But you definitely have that characteristic, unless you would disagree, Kevin. I don't think you would.
I think, yeah, there is that thirst to master things. Whether there's ever that great success after mastering them, I'd challenge Graham.
Well, I don't think you get that's the problem, I think. You don't give yourself time to master them. So basically, that maybe is just one of those things. But hey, life's about being you throughout it, and I wouldn't necessarily change you. So on that unreasonably nice ending, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
And I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.